Hey, fantasy football owners, I'm Matt Harmon.
And what's cracking? I'm James Coe. Join us on Reception Perception as we dive deep into wide receivers, the position that will make or break your fantasy team.
Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Machine Head, the Goat Head, the Black and Red. Bush and the Buffalo Sabres have been intertwined now for nearly three decades. A connection revisited during Art Park's 50th season.
It was 1996, and they had the whole thing at the Odd where they rolled out the logo, and then it comes out on the ice and they play Machine Head, and it's one of the coolest things.
With Machine Head specifically, people think of the unveiling of the jersey. It's been re-released. What is it like when that's an kind of unintended, how that connects with people?
It's always good to look smart, even if you've had not much to do with it. You know, it's great. It's pretty fun. And I think black and red go together really well.
Let's go Buffalo.
Let's go Buffalo!
Black and red schedule is out for this upcoming season. A lot of Friday nights in the Goat Head, and great to have you with us here on Sabres Live. Noon snuck up on me, I'm not going to lie, but we are ready to roll here. And for good reason, because Marty, I think not only with the unveiling of the black and red schedule, like today's a good day for reminders, because we've come through the long weekend. Some people have their kids back in a routine. Others don't get started until tomorrow. So we're all trying
very
to find-
much waiting until tomorrow. They're like anticipating tomorrow. Yes.
So we are in an anticipatory mode, right? Yes. For kids scheduling, whatever is football season, boom, this weekend, right? And we are 9 days from the Prospects Challenge. We are 10 days from FanFest. We're 17 days from the preseason opener. We are 1 month out from the regular season opener in Prague. And now we've got black and red schedule to chew on as well, which is going to culminate with Fan Appreciation Night in April. So I love being able to kind of build stuff out in this realm and start attaching yourself to fun and important dates moving forward.
So, you know, I do like, paper calendar. Yes. That's how I do it. And I've got colors and different highlighters. So blue is my color for Sabres game, but I did use my red pen and put a little red line above the games that are going to be in the black and red so that I know, because again, you're always prepared. You have your red sweatshirt on, your hoodie, your red hat, black and red, goat head and everything. I'm wearing blue. Like, I was not prepared for.
Nice choice of, nice tone of navy you're sporting today.
I know, navy and whatever. I just was like, okay, what do I have Sabres in my closet? Oh, I'll put this one on. It's part of the rotation. But I want to be prepared this year. I want to know. Like, so often I show up to the game, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. We're wearing black and red today. Like, I completely forgot. So I did underline every single one of them. Now, an easy way to do it is the Sabres have five Friday night home games this year. There's only five Friday night home games in the whole schedule. Those are all going to be black and red.
Seriously?
So seriously, when the Sabres play at home on Friday,
you're not even lying to me.
I'm not lying to you. It actually doesn't start until November 1st. And then there's one game in Anaheim, November 22nd, but the 29th is at home. Every Friday home game is a black and red game.
So did you say we have a road game in them?
No, we don't have a road game.
Oh, I thought you said in Anaheim. Sorry.
We play a road game on Friday night, but it's not going to be a black and red game. Oh, okay. Like, it's just for the home. But there's only five home Friday night games, and those are going to be black and red. And I think Friday nights are unique to Buffalo because when I played, we played a ton of Friday night games. It was a staple Friday, 8 p.m., and we'd go on the road and play Saturday on the road.
Yeah, the 8 sucked. I think I can say that with full authority.
It was only great for one thing. It was great for the afternoon nap. You didn't have to rush home and go to bed. You could have a 2-2.5 hour nap, relax. Kids would come home. For those that had kids in school would come home. You can hang out with them, and then you'd leave. But when you got to the road team or the road location at 2:30 in the morning and you got the hotel at 2:45, 3 o'clock, that sucked big time.
Especially with so many of those trips being into Canada for division rivals. So the later start plus the customs added up to not having the easiest path. It's not an excuse. It's just, it didn't make a lot of sense after
that hour
time.
Made a big difference. It made a big difference because the next day your practice is not at 12:30. It's at 11:15, whatever, your morning skate. And we used to do a ton of, we didn't have as many days off back then. And also we would play 20, 21 sets of back-to-back in the season. Now it's down to about a dozen, maybe 10 of them, you know, 10, 12, 14. If you're on the East Coast, the West Coast teams don't play as many. So Friday nights are something I felt like were special to Buffalo, and there's five this year, and it's going to be black and red. And then there's another 10 games throughout the season, a few Saturday nights, where they're going to wear the black and red at home, which is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. And for me, it was always Friday and Sunday home games. You know, as a kid, never really able until my later teenage years, able to get down to the Odd. But always listening on Friday and Sundays. And that was, you know, oh my gosh, so many crazy screaming RJ nights, you know, like the Friday night 14-4 over Toronto, and just, you know, so it was Friday and Sundays, right? So I'm with you. Like, I love the Friday night games. It's always felt like that's what it's supposed to be. I could use more Sunday games. I get it. You know, definitely don't want to kind of always be running in conjunction with football as you go through into February, but I could definitely use a few more Sundays later in the year. So looking forward to that. Again, if you missed any of the dates.
You want to know, you mentioned, like, sorry, Duffer, you mentioned Friday, Sunday. I don't know how many Saturday nights the Sabres don't play this year throughout the season.
Saturdays in general, home and away, don't
home
play?
Home and away. Like generally, there's,
what is it?
I believe, a quick look. Four Saturday nights where the Sabres don't have a game.
Is that including the Four Nations break?
That's including the 1 week for the Four Nation break, which is...
It's actually two, and don't even argue with me because I'm going to be gone for most of it.
That is in February. No, because
location
we played the 8th.
Location to be determined.
No, you know what? Air. The Sabres play the Saturday the 8th, and they play again on the Saturday the 22nd of February. So only the 15th is a night where they don't have a game on Saturday.
But they go from the 8th into that wicked break, and it's almost two full
But there's
weeks.
Only
it's pretty
four
good.
Yeah. Saturday nights that they don't play a game. Mm-hmm. So Saturday, you want to be a Saturday night Sabres game, Sunday Bills type of situation. You've got that at home. That's great.
Well, now that you're digging in, how many conflicts with the Bills?
There's only the two, I believe, right, that I sent earlier.
Yeah. And have you lobbied our travel coordinator to get us on the road for those?
I did lobby at St. Louis on the 29th of December, I believe, is one of them.
You know, we get...
The Bills play the Jets that
We got pooched out of St. Louis again in Buffalo this year. It's back-to-back years of not being able to have an MSG telecast where we could celebrate Mike Weber behind the bench. Like, yeah, I am beyond disappointed in that. And the other, remember the other nugget that I unearthed?
No, it was
a while back when the schedule came out. We don't have a home telecast for almost 5 weeks from like December 9th to January something, we do not have a home broadcast on MSG at KeyBank. It's wild.
Yeah, because the 11th is the Rangers at home, and that's the national game. The 20th is Toronto at home, national game, black and red. The 27th, Chicago at home, black and red, national game. So we go into... it goes all the way until the 11th of January, because then Washington at home on the 6th is a black and red game. But no, we have two conflicts this year with the Bills. December 15th, the Bills are at Detroit playing the Lions. The Sabres are in Toronto. So you and I are probably going to go to Toronto for that one, because there'll be conflict with the studio, and the December 29th at St. Louis.
I don't know if I'm going to go to Toronto. I might skip that one.
So that's okay. It's okay. We'll bring a cutout of you. They probably have a cutout.
We have a nice one from last year. Remember?
Oh yeah, that's right.
The Saberhead Day.
Yeah. So we can bring a cutout. We'll put two cutouts and we'll.
I like it.
From the stands. But anyway, Black and Red is on fire. Fans are really excited about it. Look, 15 of the 40 home games, because one is in Czechia. So 15 of the 40 home games are going to be in black and red. For those that have that emotional attachment to that era of the late 90s, early 2000, the Dominic Kashuk, Michael Pekka, right? Those, even the Drury Briere of, 05, 06, you're going to get your fill from it. I am a traditionalist. I love the royal and gold. I love the Gilbert Perreault, Danny Gare kind of look to it. So 25 home games in that blue and gold as well.
Yes, and I appreciate Steven's sentiments that when the playoffs roll around, let's have Bush at Party in the Plaza. And I want to thank Gavin Rossdale and his teammates, Chris and Corey and Nick, for a fun little catch-up amidst a lot of black and red Goathead fans who were at the Bush concert at Art Park just a few weeks ago. It was a Scott Balzer idea, tremendous videographer, photographer, editor for us. And we knew what we would see in the crowd that day, and it came to pass, and it was great. And it was super fun to just kind of, reminisce with people that share that passion of remembering when the black and red and the Goathead were unveiled. So it was super fun.
It's going to be interesting for that band to show up in Buffalo and see all the black and red Sabres, apparels that are in the crowd, because, Bush was big. Bush in the mid 90s, late 90s, they were huge. They were everywhere. They were at Woodstock 99. They were everywhere, but only in Buffalo would they come in and people would have a uniform in front of them, right? Because that's who people of Buffalo associated the song Bush to the Sabres and to the black and red and the Goathead.
It's not everyone, obviously, but that's the microcosm of life, right? Like, we can be like, not everybody in the arena on any given night, 20,000 people, like they're not all hardcore music fans of any genre, right?
Yeah.
Like some people, it's just not a thing. But for people that are, it can be super fun.
But if they show up to Cleveland, or if they show up to Pittsburgh, or if they show up to LA, like people are not showing up in sports jerseys and hats, because it's not like Buffalo. That reveal in 96 at the Odd with the banner and the logos and everything really started that love affair.
Yeah, and obviously, we look at where the Sabres are at here. Like I said, we're 9 days from the start of the Prospects Challenge. So, and by the way, we're only, what day are we? Is today Wednesday?
Today is Wednesday.
And then we have, Sabres at the ballpark this Saturday, right, at 1 p.m. Alex Tuch's going to fire the opening pitch. We've got a trio of really great young prospects that are going to be there signing autographs as well. By the way, massive fireworks show from the Bisons last night. Kind of caught me off guard on a Tuesday. I don't live too far away. And I felt like I was at a rock concert. There was quite a haze over the city after that post-Labor Day blast. But check out the Sabres in attendance there at Salem Field this Saturday. Roseanne, Kulik, and Ostlund are going to be there, and then the gates open at 11:30. But we're still waiting on a contract for Krebs.
Yes.
And what else are we waiting on, in your opinion?
Oh, well, I mean, the Krebs contract is interesting to me because now we're in September, and you never want to be the guy in September, especially in Krebs's position. Mm-hmm. Now, we've seen players like Willie Nylander and Marner and others, like high-end players, and I'm going to hold out. I'm going to wait until I've got my money, until I got my contract. Peyton Krebs is not that player. He's not that level of player, and I'd have to think that the differences between what the player wants and what the team is willing to give does not make it where Peyton Krebs is going to say, I'm going to miss the start of the season for that. Like, it cannot be that much of a difference to say, I'm going to miss, especially if you're Peyton Krebs and he's been in Buffalo and he's been skating and he's been, you know, getting himself ready. So I would assume and anticipate that it's going to get figured out. But if you're Peyton Krebs and you say, okay, McLeod, Zucker, Obi Kubel, Malenstein, Lafferty, you're like, I better be there at the start of training camp. If I'm not there at the start of training camp, and then somebody else is taking my spot and I'm playing catch up and I don't want to do that. So that to me is, I would almost feel like, okay, the next 10 days, that should get settled. It should get figured out. If it doesn't, that means that there's bigger differences than what should just be on the surface right now. There's got to be something a little deeper than that.
And then there's reality. So you may have sensed almost hesitation in the transition back to, you know, reality, which is hockey starting. And yes, we'll be talking about Fan Fest and Hockey Fest later in the show with Ed Grudzinski. And we'll be talking about Pittsburgh as our team of the day. But it is hard in reality to transition to the games and to the roster decisions because of the tragedy that unfolded last week. I don't know how the Blue Jackets are doing it today. You know, with, and I get it, like this is an inevitability that after a tragedy, somebody will speak on behalf of an organization, but losing the Gaudreau brothers in the circumstances in which they lost their lives last week. And you know, because you've been seeing it everywhere, as you should, on social media and mainstream media. But Don Waddell, the GM of the Jackets, and select players are going to speak this afternoon. There'll be a candlelight vigil at 7:30. Cole Caulfield touched the hockey world last night in a way that that I would say I would almost expect. And I think
it's a hard thing to do for Cole Caulfield, though, Duffer, because
but it's not only, and I just want to say this because, and I get it, you can never base life assessments of people in really, really, really limited moments. You can be impressed, you know, in a first-time interaction. But I would say this, over the course of the time, especially here since the Combine has been here in Buffalo, and the years in which, you know, we have sat down with a number of draft-eligible players, there are very few that showed, at his age, the confidence and character traits that Cole Caulfield possessed when we sat down to talk to him then. And so, therefore, it doesn't surprise me, especially upon his most recent opportunity, which was to play with his hero at the World Championships in Johnny Gaudreau, that Caulfield would make a move like this with a franchise as storied as the Canadiens to switch his number to number 13 moving forward. to honor Johnny Gaudreau. It's perfect, and I think it very much is a reflection of Caulfield and his family for the way Cole has carried himself to this point in his life and career.
Yeah, and you know, like when I saw Cole Caulfield getting the, you know, changing his jersey number from 22 to 13 and doing it because of Johnny Gaudreau, you have to go back and knowing that, you know, certain players are role models for and representation for a group of unique players or unique individuals in the world. But now we're talking about sports. We're talking about hockey. And just like a Mike Camilleri was for others, right? And he also wore the same 13 numbers.
Yeah.
But Johnny Gaudreau wore 13, smaller jersey, smaller stature players, skilled players. Cole Caulfield always looked up to Johnny Gaudreau, said he paved the way for smaller players to do it. Alex DeBrincat is the same type of player. And when Caulfield came in the league, everybody said, well, Caulfield is like Alex DeBrincat, and Alex DeBrincat is like this guy. And there's always a trickle-down effect. So Cole Caulfield says, you know what, I'm going to wear number 13. And his post on Instagram was basically saying, I was so lucky to have gotten a chance to play with my hero at the World Championship this year. And I want to honor him by wearing that number, that jersey number, which is, to me, very fitting. Now, the first thing I thought about when, you know, sometimes it's in sadness that things like that come through, like Cole Caulfield changing his jersey number to 13. But another very, very, and I'm not comparing Cole Caulfield to this player, but another very, very, very famous Montreal Canadiens was Maurice Richard. Maurice Richard wore number 15 when he first came to Montreal. And then his daughter was born, and she weighed 9 pounds. And that night, he showed up to the rink, and the jerseys are all in the middle of the room. And he grabbed a jersey number 9. Nobody had the jersey number 9. He looked over to the coach. He says, can I wear 9? And he said, yeah, sure, go ahead. And he wore number 9 because his daughter was born, and she weighed 9 pounds. And it turned out to be like this legend of Maurice Richard, number 9, right, and everything. Jerseys numbers it's an identification of a person, but not for everybody. But for a lot of them, it's something you grew up with, something that represents a family numbers or whatnot. So for Cole Caulfield, 22 was really good to him. 22 was his number. But to make that change and go to 13, that's significant because it's even more important for him to go to 13, which is what he will be doing. But you mentioned Columbus having a candlelight vigil tonight. Calgary is also doing the same at the Saddle Dome in Calgary. There's still a lot of emotional moments that are gonna happen in the National Hockey League, especially in Columbus and Calgary.
How have you been navigating this? Because I feel like it's been really, I don't want to say intentional, but I've almost tried not to read too much or view too much. I mean, we used the word repeatedly on Friday, unimaginable, and I'm still kind of stuck there. It's I'll tell you what I did read was a little excerpt from some of the tributes. We just showed footage of, you know, the growing vigil and memorial in Calgary. And somebody had left a tyke-sized pair of hockey gloves that said number 13, my hero, on them. And
Yeah, that overhead picture is amazing because they went and they used the front steps to lay items down and then that courtyard there to basically draw messages, right? And the number 13 is everywhere. And Michael Farber had a great, great expose on TSN about Johnny Hockey. And, you know, Michael Farber, like I do, he's so well-spoken and well-written and has a big heart. So when he put that together with the guys at TSN, it just was very impactful. So, yeah, I mean, even my, you know, I talk to my parents, you know, every once in a while about different things. How's dad's golf going? When are you guys going to Florida? Things like that. And that very next day, my mom called and was like, I just can't imagine, because, you know, that was without the daughters that they had, that was our family. My brother and I both played hockey. It was our family, like hockey tournaments, baseball tournaments, hockey tournament. That was our identity. And, you know, so for my mom, who's in her 70s, she's like, I can't even imagine that family having going through this right now. I get it. They still have, you know, two daughters that they have to support and they have to get support around. But, you know, she was almost taken to that time when my brother and I were 3 years apart. So 31 mm-hmm. and 28, kind of like Johnny 31, Matthew 29. Like they, it's very much, it hit home for my parents, especially my mom's, that we were talking about it. And I could sense all of that kind of grief for their mother that she was living through reading all about it.
And what incredible strength from the Gaudreau daughters, the Gaudreau sisters, when looking at it from the Johnny and Matthew standpoint. I mean, my goodness, their words. Brave, courageous, proud. Don't even begin to scratch the surface of what those two young men meant to that family.
And to the Johnny and Matthew's wives, who both shared messages on Instagram. But
yeah, that's
and it was very, very much about the persons that they were, the people that they were. It's look, we know them as hockey player, and I never got a chance to sit down and talk to Johnny about anything. Like, it just, I watched him play. I criticized him. I you know, put up his good parts. I, you know, you look at the hockey player, but, you know, then this is who we know. Just like we watch football, we watch other athletes and we know them as the athletes. But to read Meredith's, you know, long paragraph about Johnny and obviously the one about Matthew as well, is just knowing even more about the human being that they were. And that's why it's so upsetting and sad now, because the human being and the great people that they were has gone way too soon.
Mm-hmm. We started the show today talking about schedules as it pertained to the Sabres, especially black and red. And obviously, we mentioned what is fast approaching: Prospects Challenge, preseason yes. opener, regular season opener. And of course, amidst Fan Fest will be Hockey Fest. We'll dive in deeper on that. After this, Ed Grudzinski from the Sabres youth hockey side is going to be joining us to let you know how you can still get involved in Hockey Fest on September the 14th. That's all straight ahead here on Sabres Live.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hey, fantasy football owners. The road to winning your fantasy football championship starts now. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that's going to make or break your fantasy roster. Wide receivers. We analyze route running, target share, and all the metrics that matter, giving you the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
It is the back half of the Wednesday edition of Sabres Live. Marty already works here, so he's got enough titles.
Someday with Ed.
but Marty is not the director of youth hockey, despite the many hats that he wants to wear. Ed Grudzinski has that role. And Ed, welcome to the show. Very excited are you and your team to welcome in teams of players as we get set for FanFest and within it, Hockey Fest, rapidly approaching.
Yeah, thanks, guys. We're very excited. A week from Saturday, we kick off a full day of hockey action. We have teams as young as 6 years old all the way to the adult division. So far, we have 54 teams registered, but we do have some room for additional teams. And not only is FanFest a great time for all Sabres fans, but the Hockey Fest side of it is a great day for local youth hockey players, whether they're competitive, rec divisions. And like I told you guys in the break, we even have teams coming in as far as Louisiana and Gatineau, Quebec. I don't know if those are Marty's cousins, but we have a lot of teams coming in for this fun event.
Bills fans are coming in to play hockey on Saturday and stand for the Bills season opener. Actually, no, they'll play on Thursday that weekend, right? So they don't play. So maybe they come in for, you know, just a sports weekend. I know yes. that the prospect challenge is huge. We get people coming in from everywhere, teams that are being supported. So maybe that's part of that. Let me ask you this. Last year, when I watched the hockey being played, it was very competitive. Like, it wasn't just, let's just go out. Like, I love that there's a competitive aspect to it. And teams wanted to win, wanted to play multiple games in the day. So how did that change from, hey, let's have a fun hockey event to now people are competitive about it?
I think everybody shows up for the fun, but as you know, when the puck, or in this case, the ball is dropped, I think it changes your mental state a little bit, and the other team's trying to score and you're trying to score. So, and as the day goes on, you know, maybe the teams who might've lost their first two games, they're not going home without a win. So their competitive juices get going, and it's just like anything. You want to win, you want to win the trophy, you want to win the championship. But at the end of the day, we've even seen teams who didn't win a game, said they still had a great time. They're going to come back next year. And as you guys saw last year, these are official rinks. The company comes in and they build official rinks in the street. So I know you guys have been around long enough to remember the hay bales back in the surface.
Oh, yeah.
These are official rinks, and it's a great time.
Well, and last year, Perry, which is now a portion of RJ Way, was freshly paved. How is the surface holding up, and how many rinks are you building on it this year?
So currently we have 5 rinks going to be built. If we have the demand, we can build an additional one. But right now we have 5. And you know, our head of security, Mark Brenner, he made a few phone calls last year, and they came out and repaved a lot of the roads. So the streets are in great condition. We were a little worried with the potholes and people running around. We didn't want any sprained ankles or anything. So they came in, and it looks great. It looks great, honestly.
Well, if Mark's got that power, then can you please have him direct attention towards the cobblestone area and get that rectified?
Yeah.
Maybe tell the city to do something more than what they're planning to do. Holy cow. Anyway, I digress.
You know what? It's fun though. Like the parents, I thought, enjoyed when it was comes to the kids' divisions to be able to not sit in a freezing cold rink and watch hockey, and they got to be in the sun, got to be relaxed. It's a much better and much more enjoyable event, I think. And a lot of family members are there supporting others. So, you know, it's great to have Hockey Fest, but there's a lot happening at the same time. To come in for a game, you go do a few other things around the areas. There's a lot going on that Saturday the 14th.
Yeah, it's great to combine these two events because, as you know, in between the games, the hockey games, you're looking for something to do, and there's balloon animals and face painters and hopefully you two crazy guys in the dunk tank again. there's just so much going on. And then for all the fans who are here for FanFest, we saw them watching the hockey players. Excuse me. It's good to see our current players last year. They were coming out watching some of the games.
Yep.
It's cool watching the kids playing hockey in the middle of their shift. They're like, oh, Rasmus Dahlin, you know, it's like, hey, pay attention. But it's great to combine those two big events. And it's just definitely something for everybody, whether they're playing or just spectators.
I'm not in the dunk tank. Are you, Marty?
Yeah, me neither. The insurance was too high for coverage this year. After they saw the almost, you know, what would you call the coldness that we felt being in the water and the sinus and ear pressure that I got out of it. They said, no, we can't do it again this year, but we will be part of others, other things going on that Saturday. I know, Duffer, you got earlier in the day, I'm later in the day, and then the game that night. So that's going to
be the game that night, of course. So, Ed, last one, just how do people still get involved? Where can you direct them to so we can make sure we've got as many rinks as we need and as many teams as possible?
Yeah, they can register right at our website, sabres.com, or even a simple Sabres Hockey Fest Google search will bring you right to the registration site. It's a great value. I think it works out to be less than $50 a player. You get Sabres preseason tickets, you get a t-shirt, you get a full day of hockey. It's such a great value for what you're getting. And you get to play hockey all day. Our current players are around, our alumni is around, Fan Fest is going on, so... And we're even willing to work with teams. We know a lot of local teams have maybe a house practice 8-9 a.m. If that's your problem, shoot us an email and we'll make sure your schedule works out. Just want to get as many local teams down here as we can and give those teams coming in from out of town a run for their money as well.
Amazing. Good luck with everything and we'll be in touch. Thanks so much, Ed.
Appreciate your guys' support. We'll see you then.
There's Ed Grudzinski with the Sabres Youth Hockey Program. And obviously, we're looking at FanFest, and it is rapidly approaching. It happens on Saturday, September 14th in Alumni Plaza. And, you know, within FanFest, which has been a big success, the Hockey Fest portion, I think, is the event, Marty, that has the greatest growth area in years to come. And, and based on me, you know, being able to watch on a daily basis, so the number of people that never stop at any stop signs on Perry Street, like it would appear that the surface is shows no signs of been any slowing down for the players.
Yeah, there hasn't been any dips in the road. But no, you're right. Like last year, the way that it was set up was amazing. And Ed, it's funny to remind all of us that there was bay hells that was basically surrounding the rinks years ago. Balls were flying left and right. You'd be playing on one rink. You'd have balls coming on your side. If you missed the net on a shot, look out, people, like it was coming. It's a lot better now. Everything is staying in that surrounding areas. Mm-hmm. But I did enjoy watching some of the competitive hockey. And I thought last year what was funny is that some teams had goalies in full gear and some teams had goalies with basically like street hockey gear. I'm like, go get the biggest equipment possible. Stand in the net. You have a much better chance to win. But there was a goalie last year in pads, gloves, and a helmet. That was it. Like he had a little tiny like chest and arm protector, no pants, and he was good. But I mean, you can't compete with a guy that's wearing a Michelin man at the other end.
You never know.
It's street hockey. It's good.
I know. That's the beauty of it. Now, our team of the day, very briefly today, is Pittsburgh. They haven't found themselves amidst the warm weather, meaningful games in the last couple of years. It's the first time in the Crosby era that the Penguins have missed in back-to-back years. Of course, Sid had his first NHL season be what was the Penguins' fourth straight year of missing the playoffs. Then they rattled off 16 straight appearances, three cups, and, you know, their legacy is cemented within the game. But Father Time is not just a made-up phrase or figure, and the Penguins are dealing with that. What will they be this year? Will they end their drought? And what does the future look like for Sidney Crosby, in your opinion?
Well, that's a big one. I put Crosby extension, question mark. He's got a year left to his contract. So at any moment now, he can sign an extension. They did re-sign Malkin and Letang, and they brought in Carlson. And it's like, where are they going? They're the oldest team in the NHL. They were last year. They still this year. There's only two teams. Well, this was mid-July when that article was written that I read, but there was only two teams that averaged over 30 years old in their roster. The Pittsburgh Penguins are number one, almost at 31, and the Edmonton Oilers are number two. But the Oilers' main guys are young, like the McDavid and Draisaitl. They're still under.
But they added Skinner and Arvidsson, so they're going up.
So it went up a little bit, but when you look at Pittsburgh, your key guys are Crosby, Malkin, Letang, Still, Carlson. They're all older. Crosby, pulled his weight last year. 94 points, 42 of those goals. He was awesome. After him, Malkin only had 67 points, Carlson 56. Gensel was good, and Brian Rust was good. Gensel is gone, and Rust only played 62 games. Mm-hmm. So that's where it was Crosby or nothing with the Pittsburgh Penguins last year. And I fear for Pittsburgh that it's going to be Crosby and nothing again this year. I feel like Pittsburgh is going to miss for a third straight year, and that's only going to make it that, you look at the Metropolitan Division, Washington, Pittsburgh, Philly, those teams, they're all missing. It comes back to five Atlantic teams making the playoffs, three Metro teams making the playoffs in my book, and that's where we're at right now. And if you want to know where we are in my projections, because the Sabres last year went 2-1 on Pittsburgh, and they played them three times this year. I've got the Sabres at 31-23-5 after 59 games this year. 67 points, 59 games. So they're plus 8 after 59 games.
This is the alphabetical list of games.
Yes.
That we have been going through in our
team. So this is not going to be after 59 games this year, they'll be plus 8. If they played them in alphabetical order, they would be. But I have them at 31-23-5 so far with the teams of the day that we've done. So it puts them to plus 8, which is...
you're going to need to be plus 10 to 12 in all likelihood at minimum.
At minimum. And they're plus 8 right now. How does that look against other teams?
Right.
It's a question mark, and what good teams are still coming up. But I'm not looking ahead, and I'm not looking back. I'm taking teams individually, like Howard when he picks the Bills, and whatever that record is at the end of the year, that's what I think they'll go with.
How many points for Rutger McGroarty?
Well, that's interesting to me because they did make that trade. Like they traded Jagr to Winnipeg. McGroarty comes in to Pittsburgh. As of now, when I look at Dilly Faceoff and their roster projection, McGroarty would be on the second line with Malkin and Bunting. If he's there, I think 40 to 50 points for McGroarty, right? I think that's a good first year guy comes out of college. But they also could put Anthony Beauvillier in that spot. They could put Cody Glass in that spot. Like, it depends where you play McGroarty. If he plays in the top six.
You think Glass is going to make it?
I think he's a bubble guy. Like, a training camp is going to be very important for Cody Glass, a former first-round pick of the Vegas Golden Knights, has been moved around a few times now, finds himself in Pittsburgh this year. That's an addition, right? They added Kevin Hayes, they added Beauvillier, Grizzlick, Lizotte, and Glass, and they lost Gensel, Carter, P.O. Joseph, Bermstrom, Hinostroza, Zahorna. So did they bring anything in?
I like Grizzlick on their blue line. I think that helps.
Oh. Yeah, that helps. I like P.O. Joseph on their blue. I thought he was okay, but then he went on somewhere.
Both in St. Louis.
They're both in St. Louis right now. So the other question mark I have, because I know we're going to have to go to break in a little bit, is Cal Dubas. Cal Dubas came into Pittsburgh and first thing had to deal with the Malkin and Letang, gave him the extension, did the Carlson trade, everything, right? It looked like, oh, this is going to be good. Let's roll back with this group. Tristan Jarry. Let's bring back Tristan Jarry. Let's roll back with it. I don't think that it's working. And now you pair the Dubas Toronto time to the Pittsburgh time. Like, Dubas in Toronto drafted Matthews. Luckily, first overall, he had Nylander, Marner, added Tavares. But there wasn't a lot of enhancing that group. And I think he's doing the same thing in Pittsburgh right now. You have your group of Crosby, Malkin, Letang, Carlson, but there's not a lot of enhancing that group, which is the problem that Dubas dealt with in Toronto, and he's dealing with the same thing in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, but I'll say this. I as much as he maybe didn't reach full potential in Carolina, I think Bunting is going to have a career year with Pittsburgh this year, and he will offset pretty significant chunk. It's not a game changer per se for the Penguins, but I think Bunting will be better in a full year in Pittsburgh than what he showed in Carolina. We got a million birthdays and maybe White Sox minute.
Yes.
All to come on Sabres Live.
White Sox minute.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Yeah, and the truth is, if you have great stuff, you can challenge over the white part of the plate a little bit more, let your stuff just play. If you don't, you better figure out.
Oh, no! Oh, my goodness. The White Sox have just gone full White Sox.
That hurt to watch, to listen to, and I don't know. You got 20 seconds on the White Sox here and their quest
When a bad team does bad things, it happens at the worst moment. If it wasn't two outs, this would have been an infield fly rule because the shortstop and the third baseman were there. So there would have been an out. Nobody would have been running. But there was two outs, so the Orioles all ran. The guy on first got to home. So this is a three-run blunder that the White Sox did in the start of the game. They lost 9-0.
Yeah,
and they're on their way to losing more games than any teams in Major League Baseball.
In the modern era, Mets 62-120. Yeah, it's going to be way worse for the White Sox. No question about that. Big birthdays today. Let us start with happy birthday, Jim Schoenfeld. Amazing Sabre. 584 of his NHL games came in blue and gold. And yeah, the infamous moment with Cashman through the end doors and the everything that Jim Schoenfeld brought to the table. Max Afinogenoff, by the way, Shoney is 72 today. Max Afinogenoff is 45, and Sabres Prospects Challenge legend Vasily Glotov is 27. He has carved out a nice career in the KHL.
Somehow, and I kid you not, I'm not lying to you, I'll be honest with you, I'll put it all on the table. Max was in my crazy dreams last night.
What?
Because I, you know, been watching a lot of tennis, and you know, Max's girlfriend and wife's wife was Elena Dementieva. Somehow I was sitting at the US Open and Maxim Afinogenov came on to play a couple of points. Like, I'm there watching, and I woke up this morning not even knowing it was his birthday, but just thinking, wow, that was crazy. Max was in my dream playing some points at the US Open.
Honey, Deuce has gone wild in your dreams.
Too many of those.
The greatest Buffalo sports figure, most decorated of all time, and it's not even debatable, the living legend, JT, John Tavares of the Bandits. Happy birthday to John as well. We'll see you tomorrow.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hey, fantasy football owners, the road to winning your fantasy football championship starts now. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that's going to make or break your fantasy roster, wide receivers. We analyze route running, target share, and all the metrics that matter, giving you the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.